AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. Grain futures were under pressure. Lean hogs moved to the upside. But hey, the big story of the day, the cattle complex got smoked.
Live from April via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we chat with Clark Neighbors from BIS Commodities. Later, Kerry Artak from ArtakAdvisory.com. Directly following the news, Jack Scoville from the Price Futures Group. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
Yeah, hey, Davis. Oh, man.
You all right, buddy?
It is one of those days, no question about it, where you know, you look at the markets and you try to figure out exactly what the heck might be going on. You find the news and you think to yourself, nah, that can't be it. Mm-hmm. And then it is.
Yeah.
And then it is. There were reports, or are reports, that a person who has been in contact with one of the herds in Texas, one of the dairy herds in Texas, that is infected with high path avian influenza now has HPAI, the person. Okay.
Oh.
And boy, the market did not like that. The only symptoms, as I understand it, I'm sure that there are updates happening as we speak, but as I understand it, the only symptoms that this person is exhibiting is some inflammation.
Okay.
I don't know if his ankles are swollen or his wrists are swollen.
Yeah.
And if that's what it is, well, I might have HPA too. I don't know.
You feel a little swole today, are you, bro?
Yeah. Yeah. So, there's a lot happening.
Yeah.
And a lot of pieces are moving in this cattle market right now. We'll try to get to the bottom line. We will try to gain a greater understanding of exactly what is going on as the show goes on, okay?
Wow.
But,
yeah.
Boy.
I'm looking at the cattle closes right now, bro. Ooh. They are ugly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ooh, especially those feeders.
Big time ugly. No doubt about it. No doubt. Okay, let's get to the news. What do you got?
Well, let's start here. Hard red winter wheat futures trimmed mid-morning losses, but still ended the day modestly lower. Strength in the U.S. dollar index was noted as a source of price pressure on wheat futures. Wheat saw lower prices today, even with Russian wheat export prices higher for a third consecutive week. Trade sources also confirm Ukrainian grain exports in March totaled 5.2 million metric tons. That was down 600,000 metric tons from a month ago. So far this year, Ukraine has reportedly exported 34.9 million metric tons of grains. That's 8.2% behind the year-ago pace. Export inspections of wheat week-ended March 28 totaled nearly 499,000 metric tons, topping trade expectations. July HRW wheat futures 8¾ cents lower at 571. July SRW wheat 3 cents lower, 572¾. July spring wheat closed at 644½. Chip, that's down 8½ cents.
Man, I said that there were a lot of things happening in the cattle market. Well, there's obviously a lot of things happening in the global wheat trade as well. Just none of it seems to be organized at this time.
May corn futures opened fractionally lower and near session highs and posted a low range close. May corn saw an inside trading day with prices on both sides of 440, suggesting more sideways trade in the days ahead. Export inspections of corn week-ended March 28 totaled 1.43 million metric tons. That topped trade expectations. Rains falling on some of the driest areas of the U.S. Midwest is discouraging buying in corn futures, and traders expect rains to bring stress relief to the Safrina corn crop in Mato Grosso do Sul this week. May corn futures 6½ cents lower, 435½. July corn down 5¼ to 449¼. December corn futures closed at 474¾, down 3 cents. Chip, right now, looks like we're at 78 degrees and rain here in Kansas City, but it says temperatures to plummet at some point.
Let me give you a clue. The cold temperatures are coming your way. We're at 42 degrees and it's raining here.
All right.
And the local weather forecasters putting more precipitation and colder temperatures into the near-term outlook. On the corn side of things, I think corn guys were trying to figure out what the heck is going on with cattle. And may have slipped that corn up just a bit at the end.
May bean futures opened higher and spiked resistance at $12 before pulling back to post a low-range close at moderately lower levels. Export inspections of soybeans week-ended March 28, 414,000 metric tons. That fell short of trade expectations and limited buying interest. Soybean meal futures also pushed lower, while bean oil prices were modestly higher ahead of February crush data due out later today. Brazil's Ag Rural says bean harvest is nearly three-quarters complete, just slightly behind last year's pace. May beans, 5¾ cents lower, 11.85¾. July soybeans down 5¾ to 11.99½. November beans closed at 11.82½. Chip, that's down 3¾ cents today.
Yeah, and the pressure it kind of split up in that market because bean meal was under pressure today, but bean oil actually traded higher, so the spread trade was in place.
July cotton likes it, 134 points higher on the day, 93.31. On the livestock side, selling intensified in the cattle complex at about 12:30 Central Time, driving prices sharply lower. Reports indicate the sell-off coincided with reports of a case of bird flu in a human that had come into contact with an infected herd in Texas. April live cattle, $4.92½ lower, Chip, 180.07½. June down 4.92½ to 175.32½. In April feeders, $6.70 lower, 240.42½. And on your snout side, April lean hogs were 32½ higher, 86.95. Chip Flory.
All right. Thank you, Davis. Let's bring in Jack Scoville, Price Futures Group. Jack, how you doing, buddy?
Well, I've been better. How about yourself?
Yeah.
Just got some bills out of the way. So that's just paying bills is not a good thing.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I kind of feel the same way after looking at what's going on in that livestock trade. We were kind of concerned that when it ended in cattle, it would end in a dust storm, and there it is. That's a big dust up right there.
Yeah, well, geez, almost coming up on limit down here, and yeah, it was a pretty ugly trade. Outside day down, most likely more selling to come. Looks like it's headed back down to the mid to low 170s for me, and so. Probably another $6-7 to go. Yep. Anyway.
Yep. 3/4 of the Brazilian bean crop has been harvested now. It still seems like a weird spring, doesn't it, Jack, with the amount of product that has not gone through the U.S. market at this point?
Yeah, and it has been. You know, you keep on thinking that the U.S. farmer is going to open up the bin doors here a little bit, and especially with the mild winter that we've had, made it a little easier to get out there and get some stuff sold. But all reports are that the U.S. farmer has been a very reluctant seller, and in fact, soybeans from Brazil have been moving into the southeast U.S. A little bit more than normal, and that's not good for demand down the road.
Right. Right. Okay. Jack, thank you, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay.
All right. That is Jack Scoville, Price Futures Group. Coming up next, we are going to have a conversation with Clark Neighbors, BIS Commodities. We're going to go back and take a look at last week's quarterly grain stocks report, planting intentions report, glean some stuff from there. But we got to talk about what happened in cattle. We'll do that next.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
If the world is your oyster, we've got pearls of wisdom on AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Glad that you are with us. We're going to get to a conversation with Clark Neighbors, BIS Commodities, here in just a moment. Here is what Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst, is. He's either filed it or he's going to, one of the two. Says a person in Texas has been diagnosed with bird flu, the second human case linked to infected dairy cattle in recent weeks. The patient's only symptom was eye inflammation, and they are being treated with an antiviral drug. The risk to the general public is considered low, but close contact with infected birds or animals increases the risk of infection. Can I say thank you, Mr. Obvious, on that part?
You could maybe say that. We got to put this out there. We got to put it out there.
Right. The virus has spread among dairy herds in Texas, Kansas, Michigan, Idaho, and New Mexico, suggesting potential cow-to-cow transmission. There are concerns among epidemiologists about the virus evolving to spread more easily among humans, although there is no current evidence that is happening. USDA has not identified changes to the virus that would make it more transmissible to humans. Texas officials are providing guidance to affected dairies on minimizing exposure and monitoring for flu-like symptoms among workers. That's it. That's okay. The end of that one from Wiesmeyer. Okay.
All right.
We knew that because of the way that the trade was set up in cattle, that it was going to be vulnerable to something like this. And here we go. It's another, I guess you've got to consider it a black swan event hitting this cattle trade. Clark Neighbors, BIS Commodities. Jump in here, Clark, man. What do you think?
Good afternoon, Chip. You kind of read this story and wonder if it's an April Fool's joke almost.
You do.
The Washington Post released that story. I looked at, according to their website, at 12:24. Yep. At that point, cattle were trading well above 179 in the June, and by the close, we were sub 174. So,
yeah,
pretty big move today, $7 trading range, and Jim Wiesmeyer's thoughts were pretty well in line with what was said on the Washington Post article. The only thing that I thought was interesting, it talked about a little risk to the public, et cetera, but there was an epidemiologist from Johns Hopkins that had to, I think you mentioned this, talk about the worst case scenario. And if it evolves and, you know, goes from person to person and the next pandemic. So you read something like that, boom. So I think the computer saw this. It really didn't kick into the trade as far as volume till about 10 minutes after that story was out,
right.
I guess.
Right, about 12:35.
Right, and then the volume picked up, and, you know, so we'll see what – it's probably a fluid story. Keep in mind the funds were long as of last Tuesday on the Commitment to Traders report, about 59,000 contracts. Is it a risk-off trade to see what happens? There's more questions than answers, obviously, right now. And it's kind of the old story, shoot first, ask questions later, I guess, in this kind of a story. So,
yep, that's right. That's right. And because of the way that the funds were positioned, the conversation about this cattle market for Clark, good grief, for quite some time has been, guys, we're this close to the highs, get some downside protection in place. Now, I know that not everybody had that. And here we go. We've got this, I don't know if it's a knee-jerk reaction, if it's the start of a longer-term, bigger-scale sell-off. I don't think there's any way to tell that right now, is there?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. You know, a week from now, this may be old news. But, again, it's fairly fluid. You just kind of look at it and say, does common sense kick in at some point and say, right. You know, is this way overreaction? It seems like it would be, but you hate to say something like that till you have better information or better facts. And well, as you mentioned, the cattle market's been on quite a run for quite some time. So we'll see how vulnerable it is.
You know, today could have been an overreaction to a story that probably should have been anticipated. But nonetheless, the reaction happened. The technical damage has been done. So the question now becomes, even if there are no further developments in this story, we need to keep in mind that this could have just started the liquidation of the funds out of that cattle trade, right?
It could, and I think that bears watching. You know, you went through some technical levels today with moving average lines, etc. You know, it's interesting too, Chip. You have almost a $10 or $11 trading range in feeder cattle futures today. Jeez. And anybody you talk to out in the cash market right now would have said at 10 o'clock this morning, the cash feeder market's on fire. Yep. And the board's well below what that value ought to be, quote unquote. Yep. So now we'll see. I guess, you know, we'll see how things play out in the sale barns or the auction barns around. We'll see how the packers adjust to this, et cetera. But I'm sure everybody's kind of backing away. It's kind of like, quote unquote, taking protection in the market to some degree until you know more.
Yep, that is exactly what I was thinking as I was kind of watching the whole thing play out. It is. I mean, if there would have been a way to take protection, they certainly would have done that. So we got there's no sense in even trying to predict what might happen next in cattle trade, because if you do, the odds that you are going to be right are pretty low. The thing to realize is that volatility is ramped up, and I would guess within the next two trading sessions, people with risk in the cash market are going to have to decide, okay, I've ridden this out to this point. I'm going to wait for a bounce before I get any downside protection on, or they're going to have to decide by close the trade on Wednesday or, you know, something. I'm just throwing a dart at a calendar. But at some point, they're going to have to decide, okay, this cattle market is off the highs already, but I still need to get some protection in place.
Yeah, you feel like if you're chasing bad news or shouldn't be, obviously the option volatility to be ramped up with something like this, you know, as far as the cost of buying puts for a floor, et cetera, et cetera. So there's no right or wrong answer, I don't think. So I think in most cases, people are going to be a little patient and give it a couple days and see how this transpires, plays out. Because the raw fundamentals, barring something strange in this whole storyline, are still pretty firm, still pretty positive, still supportive,
right?
Unless something like this changes things. So longer term, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days down the road, this changed the dynamics. I guess time will tell. But we obviously just added a ton of volatility to that market. Yeah.
Yep. Look at you. You brought me around to the point that I wanted to make before we wrapped up this conversation about cattle, and I was forgetting it. And that it's so important, Clark, the idea that the fundamentals in this marketplace have not changed. Now, with that said, and gosh dang, I don't even really want to think about this, but if this would perpetuate some thought process or some thinking among consumers that somehow, some way, beef is less safe today than it was yesterday, then we got a big problem, right?
Yeah, we do. Or tainted milk supply, you know, yep. pick your storyline. But yeah, we don't want to think that way. And sometimes, I hate to say this, the East Coast press sometimes maybe overemphasizes those stories a little too much. So we'll see. But
yeah. Yeah. All right. You know what, Clark? We're through the first segment already. We talked nothing but cattle, which is unusual for me to do when I get you on the horn. So when we come back, we're going to spend time talking about what's going on in the grain markets. I want to go back to that quarterly grain stocks report, learn what you learned from that report. We'll do the same with the prospective plantings report and try to figure out what maybe we should learn from the basis trade as we go forward. Clark Neighbors, BIS Commodities here on AgriTalk.
Let's go to the markets page at ProFarmer.com and check today's closes. For July, HRW wheat futures were 8 3/4 lower, 571. July, SRW wheat, 3 cents lower, 572 3/4. May corn futures were 6 1/2 cents lower on the day, 435 1/2. December corn futures closed at 474 3/4, down 3 cents today. May soybean futures were 5 3/4 lower at 1185 3/4. November soybean futures closed at 1182 1/2. That's down 3 3/4 cents. July cotton 134 points higher, 93.31. Livestocks. April fat cattle 492 1/2 lower, 180.07 1/2. April feeders $6.70 lower at 240.42 1/2. And April lean hog futures 32 1/2 higher, 86.95. Get more market news every market day. Try ProFarmer.com.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. We don't make the news, we render it. AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Glad that you're with us on this Monday afternoon. We've talked about what happened in the cattle trade. We are in the middle of a conversation with Clark Neighbors from BIS Commodities out of Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Clark, go back to last Thursday's quarterly grain stocks report. Let's start with that. What, as a reminder to everyone, corn stocks in all positions on March 1, 8.347 billion bushels. That was up about 950 million bushels from a year ago, and soybeans in all positions 1.845 billion, up about 150 million bushels. From a year ago. Okay, so Clark, what'd you learn from that?
Well, I think there's two takeaways there, Chip. Number one, you mentioned the increase in the stocks from a year ago. Basically, that entire increase in stocks is on the farm versus off the farm. Those numbers were pretty steady. And when you look at the state breakdown of the on-farm additional bushels, so there's roughly 140 million extra bushels versus a year ago on the farm in Iowa, 160 in Illinois, 105 in Nebraska, kind of a rough breakdown. So there's roughly of that billion bushel increase, or close there to that, is all bushels on the farm.
Yep.
Now, I'm talking to commercial elevators around the country, and so their inventory is real similar to a year ago. The difference there also is the farmer owns a bigger percentage of those bushels also in-house, whether it's on storage or some sort of product. So the producer has a lot of ammo to throw at this market yet for this time of year. Now, to put that in perspective, those extra bushels, not to scare anybody here, but this is kind of interesting, those extra bushels on the farm nationwide, if I did my arithmetic correctly, those 974 million bushels of corn would basically run every ethanol plant in the U.S. for 2 months.
Yeah.
The 140 million bushels extra in Iowa alone would basically run Cedar Rapids every day from now till harvest just on those bushels. So the bottom line or the takeaway from that, and by the way, the extra bean bushels on the farm, would run every crushing plant in the U.S. for basically a month. So the bottom line of that is, unless something major changes, you know, these stocks numbers do not really reflect for strong basis going into the summer, possibly quite the opposite. Now, in looking at that a little closer, as you mentioned, we have 8.3 billion bushels of stocks halfway through the crop year. There's only three other years we've been over 8 billion on March 1, and that was those 3 years in a row from 2017 through 2019.
Okay.
Now, what's interesting about that is I went back and looked at basis levels in comparison this year with those 3 years. Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, if I look at, say, the Eastern processor, let's pick Decatur, for example. Mm-hmm. Current basis levels this year are really similar to those 3 years. The same with the river market, say, basing it out of St. Louis, give or take, fairly normal type basis or weak basis historically for this time of year in comparison to those 3 years. But the Western processor, a Cedar Rapids, Blair, Nebraska, pick your spot, basis is actually better this year than those 3 years. And I think a lot of that is just due to where the stocks are, even though the stocks are a little tighter in the West. We've known that all along, and I think that's reflecting in the basis. Now, Thursday with that rally in the market, which kept the market as high as we've been in several weeks, we did see pretty good movement in the country. I think there was a little more follow through in that today. So I think you had some hedge pressure that kind of put a wet blanket over this rally a little bit. So I think that's a key thing to keep in mind when the producer has this much grain to sell, and keep in mind the South American farmer has quite a bit to sell also as we go forward.
Right.
Not to say you can't firm this market up, but that extra inventory, physical inventory by the producer is going to keep a wet blanket on any kind of rally going forward, at least.
Clark, you know, Clark, for the last future. Last week had a question come in, and it was interesting. I kind of dismissed it at first, but the more I thought about it, the more I thought, you know what, that's an interesting concept. Normally, with farmer ownership as high as it is, and great point on the off-farm stocks of corn in particular, that there's greater farm ownership of those off-farm bushels this year than what there has been in the past. And I don't think there's any question about that. But with the high level of farm ownership of the bushels out there, could it turn into leverage in favor of the farmer if they just leave it in the bin?
Yes and no. I mean, let's put it to you this way. When I talk to commercial elevators this time of year, they're sitting there looking, it's 5 months till harvest.
Yeah.
What do I have to do logistically, space-wise, to get ready for harvest? So I think that's the same question the producer needs to ask.
Yeah.
Yes, you can theoretically use that leverage, but you also have to have somewhere to put the new crop. So yep. I get the question, and yeah, there's some validity to that, but in reality, you still have to have bushels in the pipeline, hit the marketplace, yeah. And there'll be some, I'm sure there'll be producers that hold this stuff till the bitter end. But
right. We've
also, I think if I would look back in those 3 years I just mentioned, if I recall, a couple of those years were years where about August 1st was basically the start of harvest from a standpoint of movement into a lot of processing plants and all that, because it was such a flux of old crop moving before harvest, it theoretically almost made harvest start 30 days early, for example. So,
yep, you're right.
I think that's, you don't want to be the last one standing, I guess is what I'm saying, potentially.
There you go. So. That's right. That's right. What about on soybeans? Same kind of thought process on basis analysis?
You know, to some degree, I mean, the one good thing is, in a comparative standpoint, corn exports have been solid. Beans have been disappointing. So we're not seeing the movement of beans, you know, through the river system, you know, as the earlier conversation talked about beans coming into the East Coast to go into crush, which is really early to do that because it works. So the crushing plants, depending again where you are in local supplies, I think it falls into the same category. I don't think there's as many beans to move percentage wise as corn from producer standpoint, but I think that general philosophy is still there. Yes. That, okay. You know, again, depending on where you're at, basis is going to be limited in most areas.
Okay. All right. Prospective plantings report. What did you learn there?
Well, I think that's where the rally came from to some degree on Thursday, based on that corn acreage number at 90 million acres. You know, trade was looking for, you know, something north of 91, because 91 was the Feb outlook board number.
Yep.
It came in a little bit lower. The question I think most in the industry look at is there's like 6 million acres out there in total production that's not accounted for. So one contact was mentioning in talking to NASS about that, comparing the relationship with the March survey and actual plantings, trying to come up with prevent plant, because in theory you could say the prevent plant number is 6 million acres, where last year was actually in reality 3.6. You know, that's always a liquid number going forward. Historically, I think, assuming the weather's good to get the crop in the ground, I think most in the industry are going to lean for that corn number to grow a little bit off of that.
Right.
But interestingly enough, a lot of those planted acres that are missing in the big picture, total planted acres, mainly the southern plain. So I don't know if I've got a good reason why Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, et cetera, are down, but that seems to be the area it had the biggest change on that. But
again,
that's a moving number. I think, you know, if you blend it all together, this is kind of a transition time for the markets. Mm-hmm. You go from basketball season to baseball season. Mm-hmm. And now we start talking about northern hemisphere weather versus southern hemisphere weather. That report tends to do that. So I think with the amount of old crop left to price, when farmers pull the plug on that, hopefully off and on in the next 60 days, because I think that planted acreage number gave us a little bit of an opportunity. You know, the market reacted a little bit on late last week. Can we get a little more move? Because this time of year, it's not uncommon, whether it's too wet, too hot, too cold, too something, as far as the weather, at least initially, in planting time, to give us a little bounce. So I think what a producer and what we've been telling some of our clients, when you're selling your old crop, price some new crop at the same time.
Yep.
Or protect some new crop at the same time.
Absolutely.
We were looking at some old charts, and we can dive in this later, but we spend very little time in the last 10 years between $11 and $13 in beans, and between $4.20 and $5 on corn. So right now we're in the middle of that, so it's in that transition. But which way do we go?
Yep, gotcha. Excellent stuff, Clark. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate you, man.
Thanks, Chip.
You bet. Clark Neighbors, BIS Commodities. Kerry Artak is next.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farm incentive to see if you're eligible.
The best talkers in ag, including you. Join the conversation on AgriTalk. Call us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Glad you're with us on this Monday afternoon. Monday afternoon means it's time for an update from Kerry Artak, Artak Advisory. Kerry, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing pretty good, Chip. How about you?
Doing just fine, just fine. Just a reminder to everyone that you can get a 2-week free trial of the Artak Advisory Service. Just go to artakadvisory.com. That's artacadvisory.com and get signed up. All right, Kerry, let's get started with May corn.
Yeah, May corn. The big picture is still bearish. We're still in a long-term bear trend. In the broader corn futures market, below 485 even. That's on the weekly chart. It's a channel top coming down over the last year or so. I don't expect to see that anytime soon. We close today around 435 half. But I do say that if we close Friday below 426 even, that sort of ends this consolidation that's been going on for the last month or so. And we should then resume the downside activity. 412 and a quarter is a quick objective. I've mentioned on your show many times how that's a long-term support area. We tested it in late February, but honestly, I think if we close below 426 even, which is last week's low, I think especially that wild day we had last Friday, if we close this Friday below last week's low of 426, I think that's the tipping point as we move through the rest of April. And honestly, yes, hesitation on the way down at 412 and a quarter, but I think 2 to 3 months from now, we will look back on that settlement below 426 even as the indication for what I would call 344 as a 2 to 3 month objective if we close this Friday below 426. Now, upside, I have 455 even. That's a respectable ceiling of resistance. Can contain buying through next week. We could trade inside that 426 to 455 area for the next few weeks. If we close above 455, that 485 level I mentioned a moment ago, long-term price ceiling expected, where we could top out really through summer trade. And inversely, if we can close above 485 even, the summer rally, if you will, can unfold as we move into June, July trade. 525 even, considered a 2 to 3 month target if we can get up and over 485 even. On to May soybeans. Now, May soybeans, they've been in a sell signal since early January. We've had some strength the last month or so, testing significant overhead resistance that this week is at 1217 even. I'd mentioned this, I think, on your show. It was in the 1220s just about a week and a half ago. 1217 even is your price point that can contain buying through the balance of May contract life, and we can continue south from here. A downward trigger would be a settlement this week, Friday, below 1174 even. We close today at 1185 and three quarter. If we settle Friday below 1174 even, this long-term objective I mentioned now for the last couple of months in the 1075 to 1085 even area, then in reach by May expiration, where the broader soybean market, I think, can bottom out for the year itself. If we close this week above 1217 even, that should mark a meaningful recovery as we move through April trade, the next 3 to 5 weeks, then likely to reach up to that 1279 even long-term ceiling, three-year channel bottom on the soybean chart that can contain buying not only through the balance of May contract life, but even broader market soybean buying pressures as we move through summer trade. It's a level that we need to get up and over in order to set off a rally in the soybeans that should play out through summer. Finally, June live cattle. Now, the feeder cattle market posted a sell signal a couple of weeks ago. Last week, the live cattle market did so. The June contract heavy below 182.75. I called this a 3 to 5 week sell signal because of the relatively constrained volatility. Now it's more like a 3 to 5 day sell signal, anticipating 172 even. We settled today at 175.32. 172 even is a big area for the June contract. Can contain selling perhaps into June expiration. And from there, we can round back up into the low 180s, 182.75 within 3 to 5 weeks, potentially into the mid-190s by June expiration. If we close the week below 172 even, though, our four-year speed line that's projected off the April 2020 COVID low that we've yet to test would be a 2 to 3, 3 to 5 week target at 162.35. So closing the week below 172 even, 162.35 likely within about 2 to 3 weeks, 3 to 5 at the most, where the broader live cattle market could bottom out through the rest of the year. And if we were to take that level out to the downside, we actually enter what I consider to be a true bear market for the broader live cattle market. But until then, it is bottom picking at various levels on the way down. And that's pretty much all I've got, Chip.
Yeah, that's a bunch. Thank you, Kerry. Boy, this cattle market right on edge after what happened in there today. No question about it. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, sir. Take it easy.
You bet. Kerry Artak, Artak Advisory. Yeah, that June cattle. He was talking about 172. Here we are, 175.32. So knocking right on the door of the of that support level. Oh boy, the reason I'm slowing down here is because I continue to get updates of what is going on in cattle.
Okay.
Sent to me by all the different sources. Looks legit. It's on the right letterhead. Department of Agriculture out of Nebraska. Nebraska Department of Agriculture continues to monitor the detection of HPAI virus in dairy cattle. HPAI has been detected in lactating dairy cattle, Texas. Okay. In an effort to help protect the herd in Nebraska, NDA is issuing an importation order effective immediately. In other words, they're not going to allow cattle to enter the state here for a while. I'll get the rest of the details for you. We'll have that tomorrow morning. I'm sure we will have that. So a lot happening in this cattle trade right now. Good grief. National Weather Service, 6 to 10 day outlook. This is for April 7th through the 11th. Above normal temperatures expected over the entire Corn Belt. The highest odds of above normal temperatures, Minnesota, Eastern Iowa, Northern Illinois, Wisconsin, and Northern Michigan. Above normal precipitation also expected over the entire Corn Belt. The exception would be far eastern Ohio. 8 to 14 day above normal temperatures, above normal precipitation for April 9th through the 15th. Thank you so much for listening today. We'll have an update on the HPAI in cattle, and we'll talk with Ken Erickson about Baltimore shipping.